All right, I have started the recorder, and let's see, my icons moved around, so it's a little harder to find them. You should get used to them being in a certain place, right? Yep. They move around, it takes a little longer. Wow, this says we're all the way up to Luke chapter 20. Does that sound good to you guys? I think that's true. That means we're moving right along, because Luke's only got like 26 chapters in it, so... We're almost done with Luke. I, when we first started this group, I thought we'd be in Luke all year. Somehow we're moving right along. Because we're only meeting once a week, you know, and Luke's a pretty big book. Okay, so in my Kindle, it's on page 171. Can somebody tell me where it is in the paper? 171. Okay, so NTI Luke chapter 20, page 171. The authority on which I teach you these things is the authority of God and the authority of you, for both are the same. Without your consent or willingness, I could teach you nothing. That to me is a really, it's a little paragraph, but it's a pretty important paragraph. You know, we can't, you know, you hear about proselytizing. In fact, you know, the average Christian in the world thinks that Jesus commanded people to go out and teach the good news of the kingdom. You know, and some faiths are stronger at proselytizing than others, but most faiths believe that it's best to bring people into the fold, convert people. And really what this is saying is that's not even possible. That the only way you can hear is if you want to hear. So you can't actually convert people. People, you know, if there is such a thing as a conversion, it's because they... Something in them is wanting that, right? You can't actually take someone and bring them into a way of thinking that they don't want. So that's kind of an interesting thought. So why proselytize? Has no purpose. And I was one of Jehovah's Witnesses for a number of years, so I know that that's true. But people know how to close the door. You know, you can't actually proselytize. You may see me as God or as a messenger from God, but I have already told you that you are not different from me. Indeed, we are the same. So whatever I am, you must also be. What's really funny to me now, because you guys know that I wrote this book, but I wrote this book by listening to an interdictation. And my perception at the time of writing this book was that I was receiving this from an other. I saw a me, and I saw a Holy Spirit. And now that I look back on that, it's really funny to me because it came from within me. You know, so it's funny to me now that I had such a strong sense of separation that even though it was coming from within me, I still saw it as an other. My personal seeing has changed considerably. I'm trying to figure out how to say this. There's a part of me, it's not fully realized yet, it's more of partially realized, like I'm in the process of realizing, if that makes any sense. But there's a part of me that is realizing in a much stronger way that this world is what some people would call a dream. That's a great analogy for it. In fact, I'm seeing more and more and more what a great analogy that is. And everything that is in this dream is projected from, we could say, our one mind. The projections in this world, however, are both what we could call ego projections and what we could call Holy Spirit or right mind projections. So the entire dream is unreal, meaning that even the gurus, the Ramana Maharshis, the Nisargadattas, the Jesuses are actually ultimately unreal, right? An inner voice that you hear through a dictation is ultimately unreal. But what's happening is part of what is being projected into the dream is projected to increase the belief in the dream. And part of what is projected into the dream is coming from our wisdom that knows the dream is not real. And it's coming into the dream in order to wake us up or to wake us up from the dream. But both are equal projections. So what that really means, ultimately, is that, I'm going to use I language, but in this case, what's true for me is true for you too, all right? What I see in the dream, what I experience in the dream, whether it seems to be world or whether it seems to be kind of otherworldly, kind of divine, like hearing a Holy Spirit, it's really all the same in that it's a projection. It's all the same. And that's what Spirit is trying to tell me here. Spirit is trying to say, you might see me as God. You might see me as a messenger from God. But the truth is, what I am is you, your projection. Your right mind projection. Your reminder of who you really are, projecting into your own dream, waking you up. This is what Spirit is saying here. And it takes some time until that is realized or accepted, but that's actually okay. I don't remember if it was Inner Ramana or Ramana Maharshi. I get them confused sometimes. But either Inner Ramana or Ramana Maharshi, one of the two, said that it is okay to be surrendered to an other until there's no longer a difference between you and the other, right? And so what happens for some people, because we get this intellectual understanding that there is no other, therefore there is no Holy Spirit, or there is no Ramana, or there is no, right? We get an intellectual understanding of that, but actually we don't have a true understanding of that. And then we start not listening to the perceived other when we're not ready for that yet. You know, we say there is no Holy Spirit, and through our saying there is no Holy Spirit, we cut off our ability to listen to that projection, when we actually are at a point where we should still be listening. That projection is the best thing we got. Does that make sense? It's the best thing we got. So to cut it off out of an intellectual understanding that it's not real is foolishness. So I recommend, and either Ramana Maharshi or Inner Ramana recommends as well, that as long as there's still a lot of belief in I'm a person and the world is real, and that's really where we're at, we should also be doing our best to listen to an inner voice, Holy Spirit, or an outer teacher that we recognize as speaking what we need to hear, or a book that we recognize as speaking what we need to hear. The interesting thing is, you're the one recognizing that you need to hear it. That's what's important, right? The fact that you perceive it as an inner voice, or perceive it as an outer teacher, or perceive it as an outer book is irrelevant. What's important is your inner recognition that you need to listen to it. And we just keep on following that until it takes us to the point that we begin to realize that was actually our own voice all along. Kind of interesting, but you want a true realization of that, not some intellectual realization, and then throwing the books away before you're supposed to throw the books away. It's a little bit stupid, and more people are starting to do that because of the non-duality talk is so popular now, and so people are saying, you know, I don't need the books, I don't need the teachers, but actually they still do. So you gotta know this within yourself. You know, be willing to know what's in your best interest, regardless of what the crowd is doing. That's important. Yes, sir.
In my experience, developing a real sense of trust in, you know, whatever it is that you recognize is feeding you.
Yes.
The truth. the act of trusting actually makes you one with what you are trusting.
Yes.
In my experience.
Yes.
And maybe that's the way that we get to that place where we go, oh, that voice is in me.
That's me. That's my voice projected into this dream. But yeah. For me, there's a real big difference between true realization and intellectual understanding. And what I am perceiving now is too many people stopping at intellectual understanding. And they're like cutting off their nose to spite their face is what they're doing, right?
They'll come back.
They'll come. Well, of course, everybody will. But I think I really enjoy saying it's okay to believe in a Holy Spirit. It's okay to listen to a teacher. It's okay to still be studying a book if that is, as you say, where you're being fed. You know, you don't have to jump on the bandwagon of I don't need these things, when actually your heart knows that's still where you're being fed, right? So stay there until your heart will tell you. when it's time to put down the book, put down the teacher, right? You'll know that within yourself. He's laughing. Why are you laughing?
Yeah, it's, well, I mean, there's infinite opportunities to see what happens when you work NTI.
Yeah.
It's, I mean, the daily, I mean, continuous. So, yeah, it's there's a lot of notions floating about. But,
there are a lot of notions floating
about. But I would say that there's a lot to be said for intellectual understanding.
Yeah. Well, I think for most of us, intellectual understanding comes first. To a certain degree, because we wouldn't even give our willingness for the true realization if we didn't have some intellectual understanding. So that does come first, but it certainly shouldn't stop there. That's just gonna, in the end, that's just gonna hurt. You know, if that's where it stops.
That was one of my major realizations or moments on an Israel trip, was when we were meditating on the Sea of Galilee, and I heard so clearly. I meant this literally, there is no other, but I realized that it was coming from within, because it couldn't have been coming from without, because there is no other.
That's right, there's no other to say that.
And that was just such a, that to me was a true experience of that. It was very powerful.
Yeah. All right, let's see, verses 9 to 19. There is confusion in your mind regarding who or what you are. Oh, this is what we were just talking about. And so you must listen to me for a time. But when the confusion has left your mind, you will realize that you have listened but to yourself, which you share with your brothers. Okay, so now he's referring to the vineyard story. So why don't I go to the Bible and read the vineyard story to you. We're looking at Luke chapter 20, so let me just hop over. Pardon me for a moment. I'm still slower with the Kindle than I would be with an actual book in my hand. So you'll just have to be patient with the handicapped person here. Let's see, go away. Thank you. Okay, Luke chapter 20. Here we go. He went on to tell people this parable. A man planted a vineyard, rented it to some farmers, and went away for a long time. At harvest time, he sent a servant to the tenants so they would give him some of the fruit of the vineyard. But the tenants beat him and sent him away empty-handed. He sent another servant, but that one also they beat and treated shamefully and sent away empty-handed. He sent still a third, and they wounded him and threw him out. Then the owner of the vineyard said, "What shall I do? I will send my son, whom I love. Perhaps they will respect him." But when the tenants saw him, they talked the matter over. "This is the heir," they said. "Let's kill him, and the inheritance will be ours." So they threw him out of the vineyard and killed him. What then will the owner of the vineyard do to them? He will come and kill those tenants and give the vineyard to others. When the people heard this, they said, "God forbid." Jesus looked directly at them and asked, "Then what is the meaning of that which is written? The stone the builders rejected has become the cornerstone. Everyone who falls on that stone will be broken to pieces. Anyone on whom it falls will be crushed." The teachers of the law and the chief priests looked for a way to arrest him immediately, because they knew he had spoken this parable against them. But they were afraid of the people. They were afraid of the people. Okay. So let's go back then to NTI, and we'll look at the interpretation of this parable. The vineyard in this story represents a mind that is shared among God and his creations. And yet, Although this mind is shared, it is also gifted to God's creations for their use. One of God's sons has chosen to keep the vineyard for himself. He has decided not to share it with his brothers or his father. The son who has made this choice feels guilty for his choice, and so he expects a battle such as the one described within this parable. But I tell you, there will not be a battle, for the gift of God is given in love according to God's will. The Father will not send servants to take the gift from you, but since you are ready to return the gift to itself, he has sent me to help you return it. What is the gift? What is the mind that I speak of, which is represented by a vineyard within this parable? It can be none other than yourself. You are the gift that God gave to you, and he gave you this gift complete. But in an error of thought and misperception, you have taken this gift and made it into something it is not. This is what I meant when I said, you have traveled from me in your misperception of yourself. And this story also tells why you feel inherently unworthy as a seeming separate entity. It is because you believe that you have stolen yourself from God. But do not forget that I have told you that you are the same as me, one with me within the Spirit of God. And do not forget that I have told you that you are God's Son, in whom he is well pleased. And do not forget that I have said that I am one with our Father, and I have come to welcome you home in celebration. So what Holy Spirit is doing is using the vineyard story to explain a feeling that we have, an unconscious feeling that we have, that we are guilty for having stolen ourselves from God. The way that this is at least experienced in me is it would be a guilt for believing I have a separate will than God. You know, like, and it's a very common belief. I think maybe we all have it. Just to use a kind of a very light example, but it's the one that's coming to my mind, is this new Israel trip was published today, and Danielle and I immediately bought our plane tickets because I wanted to buy my plane tickets first so everybody else can match up to me. So I wanted to know when my flight was going to be. And after buying the plane tickets, or right before buying the plane tickets or something, Danielle said, "What if God doesn't want me to go?" And, you know, and I said to her, just put that thought out of your mind. But that thought, what if God doesn't want me to go, is coming from the belief that I could have one will and God could have another. Right? That's the way I experience it. And I think that's the way most people experience this idea that we have stolen ourselves from God. So what this is saying is that God has given us this vineyard. Right? He's given us this vineyard, or giving us ourself, and then we believe we stole that self. But if you think about it, it's a little bit ridiculous, because how can you be given something and steal it? You know, if I give this, you know, shaker of water to Dave, then I've given it to him. He can't steal it from me, right? That's impossible. And so that's what this is saying, is that we have been given ourself in complete freedom, and yet we believe that we have stolen ourself. And this is where our inherent guilt, our inherent unworthiness comes from, as we continue to believe that we are a separate self, because we believe we've stolen what was actually given. So it's just a confusion in the mind. And as a result of believing that we've stolen it, then we also expect some kind of retribution. Whether we have the thought that it's going to come directly from God, like if I want to go to Israel, God's not going to want me to, you know, or whether we think it's going to come from the universe in some way. You know, one, a thought that I don't recall having in this lifetime personally, thank God. But I've heard a lot of other people express it, so I know a lot of other people believe it. I've heard a lot of people say that as soon as things start going good in their life, They know something's going to go wrong. And see, I never had that thought, and I'm really happy about that because it sounds like it sucks. But, you know, that kind of thought is that same idea, right? That somehow, you know, you deserve bad. And so if things are starting to go good, that bad has to be coming real soon because that's what you deserve. So all of these thoughts are mixed up in our psyche because we believe we've stolen ourselves somehow from God. When again, that's impossible because it was a gift. Right? So verses 20 to 26. What are you to do? Now that you've got this conundrum of believing you've stolen yourself. I say to you, do not deny your experience in the world. It is an experience you have chosen, and it is your gift to yourself, just as your father gave a gift to you. But choose to use your experience to remember your truth. You do this by choosing to listen to me, for I am the voice of your truth. I have come not to take away from you, but to give you back your inheritance, the gift that was given by God. So what happens for a lot of people when they start learning again intellectually that the world is not real? Is somehow they try to cut themselves off from their experience. But the way they try to cut themselves off from their experience is not the same as spiritual detachment. It's denial. Spiritual detachment actually does help you to wake up. But denial of your experience out of guilt, like you're not supposed to be experiencing the world, you're bad for experiencing the world because the world is not real and you made it up, that is not helpful. So the very first thing that Holy Spirit is trying to do is to help us break that habit of feeling guilty about being here, about seeming to be in a separate body, about seeming to have thoughts, about seeming to have desires, about seeming to want things to be a certain way. You know, if I was to get annoyed with Susie for some reason, you know, what a lot of people will do on the spiritual path is then feel guilty for being annoyed at Susie and even try to deny that they're annoyed with Susie, lie about it to themselves and others, right? That's not at all helpful. It's actually much more helpful in the beginning stages for me to give myself permission to have the experience of being annoyed with Susie. And then give that experience to Holy Spirit for my healing. It's always much more helpful to be honest about our experience. You know, denial just doesn't help at all. And so that's what this particular paragraph is saying. Don't deny your experience in the world out of some guilt, like you're not supposed to have it because you weren't supposed to steal yourself, right? Instead, admit, this is my experience. My experience is this annoyance, or my experience is this fear, or my experience is this frustration, or my experience is the belief that I need to control this, or I'm not safe. But then give that to Spirit. Say, however, I'm willing to be healed from this, right? So self-honesty and willingness is really what we want. Those heal. Verses 27 to 40. God is the God of the living, and so there cannot be death. For God is in everything that does live, and if death could take a thing that lived, death could take God. You do well to understand that you do not understand. You do well to accept what I say without trying to understand it. For to try to understand is to try to conquer the thought and take it under your control and under your rule. But a thought of God's cannot be conquered or controlled or ruled, for all of God's thoughts must be free. Accept the freedom of God's thoughts without giving into the temptation to question or understand. In accepting this freedom by extending your trust and innocence, you accept your freedom and your innocence. What happens if we start thinking about metaphysical teachings too much is we actually at some point just get ourselves into confusion. You know, like one thing that happened while we were in Israel, which we did not experience at all, by the way, from where we were. But one thing that happened while we were in Israel is that Israel started bombing Gaza Strip, shooting missiles off and bombing Gaza Strip. We were totally unaware of this. I found out on our last night there, and then when we got back, I looked it up and saw that there was actually some pretty strong fighting going on there. And one of the pictures that they showed that I saw on the news photos I was looking at was a young boy, maybe 3 years old, who had been killed in one of these missile bombings, and his body was kind of mangled. If you start thinking too much, you know, when you're looking at a picture like that, it is almost impossible to reach a point of clarity, because there's the appearance of absolute unfairness, the appearance of something that should not have happened, the appearance of the death of an innocent child, right? And when you start thinking about those things, the only place that you take yourself into is confusion. So what Spirit is saying here is that as long as you're still at the level of only intellectual understanding, you haven't had true realizations, a true change in seeing, you can't really fully understand Spirit's teachings. You can't, with your intellect, look at a picture of a mangled 3-year-old body and understand there's no death, all is well. You just can't. However, that's true. So what Spirit is asking for at this phase is just trust me. Just trust me and come along with me, and eventually you will see. So for now, some things you may have to look at, like the picture of a 3-year-old mangled boy, and just say, I can't understand this. I understand that I can't understand this, but I still trust Spirit, and I'm not going to put too much energy into worrying about this. Instead, I'm going to put my energy into the practices that Spirit is teaching in NTI or A Course in Miracles or whatever, and I'm going to go for the experience of having my seeing transformed. So he's really asking us to put aside some issues now, because you just can't understand them, and all they're going to do is keep you in this state of confusion. Come with me and see, is what he's saying. Come with me and see. Okay, so our last paragraph then, verses 41 to 47. The one who will know himself is the one who stops the effort of trying to define who he is and where his place is within the world. The one who will know himself may ask these questions, but he will be satisfied when the answer does not come. For it is through no definition that definition is given. It is through no place that place is found. Listen to the voice within and do as it asks without seeking fullness of picture. And it is fullness of vision that you will see. Another thing that many people try to understand is, what is my part in the overall spiritual plan? Now, for some reason, I found out my part. And the funny thing is, there was a joke in this. The book that I had read was Peace Pilgrim. And Peace Pilgrim talks about how she went through a 15-year growing up period, she calls it, but it was a spiritual awakening. And then she had the moment of spiritual awakening. And then that same night, after her moment of spiritual awakening, she was given her assignment, which was to walk. So I actually entered the spiritual path. I thought if it took her 15 years, it would take me at least 25. So I figured I had a 25-year growing up period. And then after my growing up was complete, then I would find out my job. So I didn't actually ever look for a job. That's the funny part. And I was only 7 months into it when I received a very distinct calling asking me to write for Holy Spirit and teach what I write. So that was kind of funny. I wasn't even looking, and it came. Many people, though, immediately start looking for what is my job. There's something in them, and I think it comes from guilt. There's something in them, I think, that is saying, if I don't have a spiritual job, if I'm doing things that seem more secular or more worldly, I'm unworthy, right? And so they're always trying to figure out how they fit in the spiritual picture. And again, that's a mental trying to understand how you fit. And so what this is recommending is that you forget about that. And like I said, in my story, I had already forgotten about that because I didn't have an expectation of knowing, right? This is recommending that you forget about that. Forget about trying to figure out what your specific role is. Instead, focus on awakening. It reminds me of A Course in Miracles where it says the miracle worker's only responsibility is to accept the atonement for himself, right? So focus on awakening. Focus on noticing your false beliefs and letting them go. Focus on your own self-honesty. Focus on your own willingness. Be the perpetual student, if you will. And then, you know, whenever a calling is to come to you, it will. Whether it's, you know, like me, it comes early. Or like Peace Pilgrim, it comes late. Or somewhere in the middle. That's actually not even important. What's important is your own awakening. That's the greatest service that you provide. So forget about your job. you know, until it comes, just forget about it and focus on your awakening. So that's chapter 20. So there were a few things in chapter 20. The first thing in chapter 20 was that the reason we are learning this is because we want to learn this. And in truth, although we may perceive it as coming from a book or a teacher or an inner voice, in truth, it is just us teaching ourselves, right? That's what's really happening here. Because we want to learn it, we're teaching ourselves. Our guilt or unworthiness comes from the belief that we've stolen ourselves from God. But that's impossible because God actually gave us ourselves. So there's no way we could steal it, but we believe we've stolen ourselves from God. And then out of that believing we've stolen ourselves, there's a lot of guilt, and that guilt shows up for us in a lot of ways. One way that it hampers our spiritual awakening is by leading us to deny our own experience. Like I said, if I'm annoyed with someone, I deny that I'm annoyed because I feel guilty for being annoyed. And that actually hampers our spiritual awakening. Another way that the guilt gets in the way is by us trying to intellectually understand things we can't understand at our current scene, like the death of a little boy and what appears to be an unfair war, right? Another way that our guilt gets in the way of our awakening is by trying to figure out what our spiritual job is, because we think we need a spiritual job to be worthy. So really what this is doing is this is explaining to us that we have unreasonable guilt or unreasonable sense of unworthiness because we believe we've stolen something that we couldn't have stolen because it was a gift. And then this unreasonable guilt is actually getting in the way of our own awakening, right? And so really what it's asking us to do is to start notice how our unreasonable guilt is getting in the way of our own awakening and start being willing to look right at it and say, that's my guilt. It's my guilt that's causing me to deny this anger right now. And that's not helpful. Or it's my guilt that's causing me to want to have a spiritual job of some type. And that's not helpful. And just start recognizing it for what it is, recognizing how it shows up in our life, recognizing how it's getting in the way of our own healing, and start just deciding not to listen to it. Just recognizing it's not helpful. It's a stumbling block. So that's really our assignment for the next week, is to see if we can see how our own unreasonable guilt is holding us back from realization. So with that said, I will turn off the recorder and we'll take a little bit of time in silence and contemplation.